Hey everyone, Josh here. Quick question for you. Do you like coffee? Even more important question, do you like fresh coffee? Coffee that's roasted to order and doesn't taste like the bottom of your kitchen oven? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you need to head over to MaquanoCoffee.com and get yourself some of the best coffee there is to get. Whether you like the light roast or the dark roast, or you're feeling a little whimsical and you want to get that sample pack, Maquano Coffee Roasters has everything you need. And just when you thought this couldn't get any sweeter, make sure to use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. Do yourself a favor and stop drinking bad coffee, because you know what? Life's too short for that. Head on over to MaquanoCoffee.com and use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. You will not regret it. Thanks, and now on to the show.
What do you got for me?
What's wrong with you people?
I got nothing for you.
What's wrong with you?
Benediction right there. That was so good.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome to The Reformatory, the podcast for the local church and by the local church. And we are your local churchmen. My name is Josh, and I'm here, as always, with Captain Jack Barry. My friend,
Oh, my gosh.
Dude.
This so has stupid. Been,
I'm about ready to throw
dude,
Josh, every piece of technology I have out the window,
Josh,
and
will
then run it over with my F-150.
Josh is literally going to be Rage Against the Machine in a literal sense right now, people. He is going to rage against the machine.
Literal
right
machines. Dude, I have been fighting technology for 2 days.
Yeah.
And I think I've got it taken care of now. I don't know, but dude, I need a new computer. Like the
Serenity
computer that
now.
I have, it's so
Serenity
old.
Now, people.
It's so old, and it's limping along. But they're just so expensive. That's the stupid thing about technology, is how expensive it is. And when you know, like when I start to see, like I am now, my computer going, you know, face up, it's not good.
Yeah.
And it makes me nervous. But Jack, we're gonna say a prayer, we're gonna breathe deep, and we're going to move on. We're gonna soldier on, because that's what we do on this podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We might have lost out first round, you know, on the
2024. I thought they had us in the first
half,
Josh.
Podcast ranking March Madness. But
oh,
you know what?
Gosh.
A lot of other big podcasts did too. And as we all knew was going to happen, it came down to the battle of the Wilsonites. We all knew it was going to happen.
Let's be honest with this.
Yeah, and that's all right. That's okay. But Jack, my friend, before we go any further, why don't you hit us with some of the business and give us this week's Reformatory Cigar of the Week. What do you got for us?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have another My Father cigar, Marches for My Father. That is the cigar of the month. This is from one of the brands called Don Pepin Garcia. Don Pepin is the master blender for My Father. Actually, Foundation has moved all of their kind of blending over to My Father. So they were with Aganorsa. This is the weird thing about cigar brands, is you can do this. Like Foundation, who we did in February, they primarily used Aganorsa leaf for their brands as far as their tobacco and their rolling and stuff. Now they're using My Father with Don Pepin Garcia, who is an actual person. Thank you very much. This is his line called Don Pepin Garcia. It's called the original Exquisitos. It's actually a Toro. So yeah, it's quite the mouthful. It is a Puro Nicaraguan, straight up.
Okay.
Puro Nicaraguan has a very dude, these these tasting notes when people describe this.
They're always wild, dude.
Undercurrent of cocoa powder. Like, what on earth? Like, okay, nice. Like, I'll take that. And then earthy and almond finish. That's basically in a nutshell. Yeah. But a Toro, it's consistently been rated over 90. So it's been consistently rated at 91 points the last few years. Josh, you want to guess the MSRP on this bad boy? Dude, it's a banger.
$13?
No.
No?
I'll give you one more shot.
I feel like lower. I got to go lower. Like, lower. 11? 10?
MSRP. $8 to $9.
Dude, okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
MSRP. So,
I like that, dude. Yeah. That's awesome.
The Don Pepe and Garcia Original Exquisitos, or the... It's a Toro, let's be honest. Yeah. It's a Don Pepe and Garcia Original Toro, okay?
Yeah.
$8, $8 to $9, go get you some. Earthy, cocoa, almond.
All the deliciousness.
Have at it, people. Yes.
All of it. Dude, well done. As always, Jack, bring in the class, bring in all the knowledge, bring in the fantastic reviews. Well done, my friend. Listeners, that is the Reformatory Cigar of the Week, and you know what to do. Go and smoke to the glory of God. All right, Jack, so we're going to try to get through this ep without any other technical difficulties. We're going to do our best, okay. Right? But we've got a really good topic for today. This one was actually submitted by a listener, actually one of our patrons, actually, and they want to know our thoughts on how to smoothly transition from a pastor that has been there for a while to a new pastor, right?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming... I didn't ask, but I'm assuming that this pastor is probably the primary teaching role, just because that's usually where you kind of feel the difference the most.
Yeah.
And there's the most visible transition, right? But as it's true in times of every local church, leadership transitions, right? Sometimes for very bad reasons, as we have seen and talked about on this podcast, but often for good reasons, right? Yeah. Or I would say maybe at least neutral reasons, right? A pastor maybe, moves into a different stage of life and the Lord's kind of calling him out of the ministry for a while, or, like in the case scenario specifically where I think that this question came from, the pastor's kind of just getting up there in age, right? And their time in the ministry is coming to an end, and they've served faithfully and they've served well, and they're in the twilight years, right? Where they're transitioning out of those roles and making room for the next generation, right? So for one reason or another, transition within leadership within the local church is inevitable, and I would say healthy. And I think that there's good ways to go about engaging in that transition. And I think that there are, less good ways, less profitable ways. Right. So we're going to just kind of talk about some of those today. But Jack, I want to throw it over to you first, as you're thinking through maybe some of the transitions that you've been through, or that you have seen. What are some maybe good ways, or if you want to take the negative first, what are some bad ways that you have seen that transition, come about within the local church?
I'm going to take the negative on this.
Okay, here we go. I figured we have to talk about it.
So I have seen just really crazy stuff. I've seen, I don't know if I call it a hostile takeover or what, but yeah. I mean, Mars Hill was like a prime example of that. I was a member at Mars Hill Church, from about 2011 all the way till it imploded in 2015, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So, I remember leaving to go to Afghanistan and then coming back and then everything changed. It was just nuts. There was new pastors. I hadn't gotten anything. It basically was a hostile takeover. I have seen, so I've seen that. I've seen other ways to where I think churches are just, I wouldn't agree with the route that they do it, but I understand the logic in it. So I've seen churches to where, they bring in like consultants to try and get a new lead pastor, new preaching and teaching pastor. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Josh and I are going to talk about the route that we would take that I think other local churches are doing very well at. Even in my local church, I would say about 2017-ish, it was actually a senior pastor model. And then they had transitioned from a senior pastor model to two members coming in or two guys coming in and making it a plurality of elders model. And then starting to build up from there. So you could see it going in a different direction as well, too, for the better. But, yeah, I've just seen some really bad ways. I think the main thing that we need to keep in mind is that please, whatever you do, like I would just suggest to churches to build up a core group of guys and start building them up and discipling them on how to preach, on how to lead, on how to shepherd, and go from there. Like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to look for all these other people outside of your church. Just build people up in your local church. I think I'm going to get off that soapbox, and Josh, I'll throw it back to you and, and talk about what how we would probably go about this, because I think we're on the same page about this. So
yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, Jack, like you, I've seen this kind of transition done a plethora of ways. I think, you know, you already talked about the best case scenario, right? So I'm going to talk about a couple more, and then I think we're going to end, you know, obviously in the same place, right? But you know, I've seen, and I've actually been involved with as someone as someone who has looked for jobs in ministry, right? The vast majority, I think, of churches in America today, when they are looking for a new pastor, right, or someone, again, this is part of my problem is because so often whenever you start talking about looking for a new pastor, it very quickly turns like all of the language turns into like business corporate America, right? And that I think is part of the issue, right? So even when we use the language, we're looking for a pastor, right? To me, that used to be familiar language and now it is foreign just because of the way that my convictions have shifted on who do we bring in to the role of elder within the church, right?
Yeah.
So I would say 10, 15 years ago, if you had asked me that, you know, my answer would have been the following, and this is because this is how I was engaging in actually actively trying to find a job in ministry, right? It's very businesslike. You have your ministry resume, right, with your education and your experience and all the things that you have done, and you put that together just like a regular job. You head on to churchstaffer.com, or what was the other one? Vander Blomen.
Dude.
I always do that name. It's always stuck with me, dude.
Vander Blomen.
Right? Yeah, dude. So you head on to Vander Blomen or churchstaffer.com, and you start searching just like you would Indeed. Like they basically are the Indeed for church jobs. That's what they are, right? And you narrow it down to denomination, to church size, theological distinctives, all that stuff, and you start putting your resume out there. And maybe you get a few hits, and then maybe, you know, that interview process starts, and then you have the first phone call with the pastoral search committee, because it's always a search committee, right? And then that search committee is usually filled with a myriad of different people, some that should be on there and some that probably shouldn't be. And My wife tells this funny story, man, about, so she grew up in the Southern Baptist churches. Okay. And again, this isn't a blanket. This is not a blanket statement at all. There's some very solid Southern Baptist churches.
This
out
is
there.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Like extremely solid, but this is a story that she'll bring up. You know, they were looking for a new pastor and they made a really big deal about wanting to have a representative of the youth on the search committee. Because, you know, he's going to be a pastor of the youth as well, right? So she got volunteered or voluntold to be on this search committee. And oh she, when she tells me the story, she laughs because she's like, even as like a 15-year-old, she's like, she remembers thinking, what am I doing on this search committee?
Yeah, seriously.
Why am I here? So you run into a lot of that, right? And then, you know, if you make it past a couple interviews, then they'll have you show up, maybe preach a little bit, spend some time with the church. They start to get to know you. You have some in-person interviews. You know, maybe they'll have you come do that a couple times and then they make a decision, right?
Yeah.
Very businesslike, right? Yeah. And here's the thing. This is what I want to say before I move on. I have obvious issues with this model, as popular as it is. I do have some issues with it.
Yeah.
I have seen this work.
Okay. Yeah.
I have seen it work. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's the best model? No.
Yeah.
Am I comfortable doing that now? No. If yeah. I was looking for a job in the ministry again, is that the route I would go? No. I'll be completely honest with you. It's not. But I have seen the Lord use, obviously, you know, imperfect or, you know, well, they're all imperfect, but less than, I would say less than desirable. Yeah. Less than stellar ways, right? To bring the right person to the right church.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen it work. I've mm-hmm. seen it work. And there are many pastors that I know that have been pastors of their church for 10, 20 years. And that's how it happened. They sent their resume and boom, you know, like they went through that whole rigmarole and they're still there. And it's a great fit and the Lord blessed it. Right. So, I want to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. However, I will say this, based on personal experience, I didn't have one where that worked. All of the ministry positions that I have held, the best ones were ones that I came to while first being a member of that church.
Yeah.
All of the worst experiences that I have had
yep.
have been ones that I did the whole resume thing, like, you know, that whole deal. Now, again, my experience does not dictate reality, which is why I said the aforementioned statement of not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, right? But I would say this. This would be my advice, and Jack already touched on it. When you are faced with the task of filling the role of an elder within your church, whether it is the main teaching elder or not, right? I believe it should be the same process. I believe the best and most faithful elders come out of the congregation that they are already in.
Yeah.
Is it possible to bring somebody from the outside in and have them be effective and have them, you know, be integrated in the church and be a blessing to the church? Yeah. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It's possible. Right. But to expect that individual, will be able to be effective in their role as a pastor after just getting to know the congregation for a couple months and then boom,
yeah,
you're expected to lead these people and these people are expected to follow you, right?
Yeah.
I just know from personal experience, the amount of trust that it takes to submit to an elder for your spiritual care, for your soul care, that takes time. And that takes a relationship being developed. And that takes that relationship needing to be cultivated and worked on. And it's not something that happens effectively, with two or three times preaching and then an interview process, and then we have to make a decision, right?
Yeah.
The best and most, and I believe the most faithful, and I would say the most biblical route to take when looking to replace an elder, right, is who is in your own local church that the Lord has equipped to do that, right? Because, and something that I always look for, right, when looking for an elder or when looking for a deacon, looking for someone to fill those roles, the first thing that I look for is who's already doing the work without the position title.
Yeah.
Who's already doing it?
Yep.
Who's already serving? Who's already giving of their time? Who's already, you know, in people's homes and caring for them? Who's already has that natural bent toward that position because of the gifting that the Lord has given them? That's the first thing that I'm always looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I truly believe that the best route to take is to look at the people that are in your own church, the faithful men that are in your own church, and if at all possible, find the replacement, find the person to fill from that pool of people, that next generation, right?
Yeah.
Which, Jack, I want to throw over to you, which really demands, and I would say necessitizes the importance of godly multi-generational discipleship into the ministry, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Part of it too, first of all, is really identifying guys who already are kind of doing that work, like you said. But I'm thankful because the way that our local church has functioned in kind of bringing men up is to bring in other different multi-generational kind of voices. So I have two of my pastors who are on what we call Pastors and Leaders Institute. We also have another guy who is a former pastor who is now a member at our church. He's not an elder. He's just kind of like a consultant, so to say, or like a generational voice because he's older. And then there's three guys who are roughly kind of within a 10-year age frame. So myself and a couple other guys. And this is the second iteration that we've done this. And so this is kind of like bringing up people within the local church. I think you've known this as well, too. Ryan Wood, who was at a previous mm-hmm. church, he came to my local church and he was a member and he got raised up as a member and then he got raised up as a pastor. So mm-hmm. a lot of it was just confirming stuff. So
yeah.
There's ways in which the Lord works where churches unfortunately die, and that was the case with Ryan's church, and it was really unfortunate, but a lot of their members moved over to my local church, where I had moved from one church over to my now local church as well too. Mm-hmm. And it really started to change the dynamic, but also it was a time of confirming and reaffirming Ryan's gifts to see if he would become a pastor at my now local church. And so there's ways in which you can do it. I mean, there's many different multiple ways, but I think that Josh and I both affirm that you should become a member first of that mm-hmm. local church and get to know the congregation before you start to make moves and do this kind of typical job hopping hunt to be a pastor. So
Yeah. And I can hear some of the questions, right? Like, you know, guys, what if I'm in a church that doesn't have that, that is, you know, maybe it's a small church that doesn't have that ability. It doesn't have that pool of men to draw from to replace. Well, then I would say at that point, you trust in the Lord's will. You trust in the Lord's sovereignty. You trust in the place that he has you in the moment, and you do go searching, right? Because you have people that need to be fed and you need to have a qualified person to do that, right? And that's why, again, at the beginning, I didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because I do believe there are situations where, like, that's the only thing you can do, because that's just where the Lord has you, right? But I would say this. I would say as you are engaging in that, right? And you're putting, you know, the search out there on this church staffer and the Vanderbloemen, and you're receiving, right? You're receiving resumes and things like that. As you are receiving men to candidate for that position, right?
Yeah.
Make it a priority that they are interacting with your people as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Get them in the homes of the other elders. Get them in the homes of the deacons. Get them in the homes of the members. And hear the wisdom from your members and your deacons and your elders regarding how those interactions go, right? Because, again, you know, in the case that Jack just described with Ryan, and Ryan's a lovely brother. I love him mm-hmm. to death. Like, it, that is going to, again, go so much smoother because he's already known.
Yeah.
He already has relationships. The people already trust him.
That, yeah.
So his ability to be a faithful and an effective elder, that relational work is already done.
There's already testimony right. to his character
exactly.
and to exactly. the way that he ministers. So it was easy yep. enough exactly. for us. I think that I would say a quarter of the congregation already knew Ryan, mm-hmm. but he kind of needed to have that time. He also needed some healing too. Let's be honest.
Oh,
for church,
sure.
When your church yeah, yeah. closes over COVID stuff, there's yep. a lot of stuff that happened that I think that he yep. needed healing. He needed healing from, yep. and he needed confirmation in. And so I get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a big difference between the way that we had seen it versus what's been typical in American evangelicalism. And finding
yeah, no,
pastors,
for sure.
So.
For sure. For sure. And that congregation, you know, is going to be blessed by that because they already know yeah. him, right? So
yeah.
if you're not in that position, understand that your congregation, you want to make this as smooth and I would say as caring a process as you can. And one of the ways that you do that is by getting the vast majority of interaction with the people as possible, because that relationship is going to have to be cultivated. And if you expect your people to fall under this man's leadership, this man's authority as an elder, you have to realize that takes time and that takes trust.
Yeah.
Right. So keep that in mind, right? Make sure that those interactions are as full and plentiful as possible. And then I would also say this, Jack, I would say as you are going through that process, begin to make plans now as to how are we going to not have to do this in the future?
Yeah.
How are we going to get to a point in our church to where we are not looking outside of our walls for those that would serve us, for those that would be in the position of leading us, right? How do we get to a position to where we are able to look inward to the men that are already doing the work to fill our deacon roles, to fill our elder/pastor roles, right? Because that, I believe, is the healthiest. And I believe that is the mode and method that results in the greatest amount of care for the congregation, right? Because as we lead our congregations, we have to be caring. We have to be gentle. We have to be good shepherds, right? And a good shepherd understands that they can't just bring some random Joe Schmo shepherd from the other field in and expect all the sheep to be like absolutely A-okay with it,
yeah,
right?
Seriously.
It takes time, right? It takes time. The sheep need to understand, how does this shepherd lead? You know, what are the ways that they communicate? How do we follow this new style? Because every person's going to have a different way that they lead and a different way that they confront, a different way that they discipline, right? Like all of those things are going to be different. So be caring to your congregation and realizing that they're going to need time to move through all of that, while at the same time lay plans. Don't cease to have the conversations. And if the conversations haven't started, start having them. How do we get to a point yeah. to where we can look inward and not outward, not outside of these walls to find people to lead our people, right?
Yeah, I think Big Eva has sung, sir. I really
man.
Don't have anything to say other than that.
It's a short one today,
dude,
man. Look at
yeah.
us. Yeah,
yeah,
look at us. Yeah,
I really
yeah.
don't have anything else to say other than like yeah. – I think that it's key to build up your bench. you shouldn't have just if the main preaching teaching pastor goes down, right? You shouldn't have just one other guy on deck. Yeah. Like, thankfully in our church, I can confidently say there's like five other guys that could probably preach.
Yeah. That's
nice. If our main preaching and teaching pastor goes down, so to say. So, right. But I think we've done that purposely because we don't want our pulpit just a one trick pony show, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think your guys' church does that as well too. You kind of diversify the pulpit with who preaches, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's important because I think people need to hear different generations preach, different ways of life, different life experiences, and how you see the word and how you communicate that. And that's just one example.
Yeah.
But you have to you have to start building your bench full of elders to really start to accommodate for your congregation. So that's all my extra innings talk. So.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right, man. The only thing extra I would say too is that if you find yourself in this position, where you're struggling with finding someone to fill that role, right? Reach out to other local churches in your area for help, right? Like, the Lord has given us the blessing of being often in close proximity with other biblical local churches and hopefully like-minded churches.
Yeah.
Hopefully churches that you're comfortable with locking arms on with and asking for assistance in this, right? Maybe they, like, I don't know, like, maybe they'll have somebody in their congregation who has been, you know, in that process and yearning for that they might be an easier jump than bringing somebody in from like another state, right? Or maybe the elders of that church can help share the load and share the burden, maybe with preaching or things like that, while that church is in transition looking for somebody else, right? So don't feel as if you as a church have to just kind of bear the weight alone. I would hope and I would pray that the Lord has maybe given a couple churches around you that you'd feel, you know, good with locking arms with to kind of help through that process. So, I would just say that, you know, extra inning thoughts, those would be mine too. But, it's not an easy thing. It's a hard thing. But I think if done well, and the process is followed, and especially if you get that person in front of your people, they got to be in front of your people. They got to be in the homes. You got to be interacting, right? You have to know who this person is before you sign them up. That's so important. So keep that as a primary and drench it in prayer, drench it in counsel, and the Lord will lead. He will. You know, it is the Lord that directs the steps. The Lord is the one that brings leaders to his flock, and he has done it since the beginning of the church, and he's going to do it until Jesus makes everything new. The Lord is building his church. He will never cease to do that. And, you know, one of the ways he does that is by providing godly leaders. So trust in that. Trust in that. And just walk the process. Walk the process. So, Jack, my friend, why don't you please get us out of here?
Without the run of technology just going amok right now, right? So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, if you appreciate Josh and I's attempts to make the local church central in the believer's life, you can follow us on the sociables, if you will, and follow us there, ask us questions, DM us like this patron did, and asking this question for us for an episode or anything along those lines. And you can follow us and do that on the sociables, like I said, the Facebook, the Metaverse, if you will, Instagram, goes well with chocolate marshmallow. And as always, the sociable, formerly known as Twitter, X. Yes, the dumpster fire. You can follow us all on those sociable platforms at the tag at Reformatory Pod. Josh, you can tell the lovely people how they might see our mugs, support our mugs in other ways.
Our mugs. Our ugly mugs.
Yep.
Yes, yes, yes. You can, there are multiple ways you can support the Reformatory. One, we have a YouTube. If you want to see this as well as hear this, head on over to youtube.com and search for the Reformatory Podcast. Like, comment, subscribe, hit the little bell for notifications, as the kids say. You can rate and review this podcast on Apple and Spotify. And You know what, people? We ask that you do that. Maybe long-time listener, first-time reviewer, we'd appreciate that. Give us those 5 stars for 5 solos. We would love you for it. We really would. Last but not least, we do have a Patreon, just like every other podcast, but the difference is ours is better. You can head on over to Patreon, join the Podluck, as we call it, for a fiver. $5 holla. $5 a month gets you bonus eps, gets you episodes early when technology works. Our patrons aren't getting this ep early. They might get it, 6 hours early. And I did everything that I could. I'm sorry, but they're still going to get their bonus eps. Right. And that doesn't go on the main feed. That's for our patrons only. So head on over there to join the Patreon page. And our pledge to you, if you do that, is that your name shall be hallowed.
Hallowed, sir. Hallowed.
Hallowed through the halls of the podcast. We would really appreciate it. We thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the next step of the Reformatory.